It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Hour number two, we are here. Coming up at the beginning of the next hour, Steve Hilton will join us to talk about a myriad of things. Steve-O, of course, from The Next Revolution on Fox and his own podcast now bearing his own name, which makes sense because it shouldn't bear anybody else's name. It's not going to be the, you know, the Roy Johnson podcast. Duh. In a mixed bag of things here, a bunch of things I'm going to throw out there, just non-related, just a mixed bag. AI. We've been talking about AI a lot on the Appleton program. Artificial intelligence. There seems to be a greater and greater concern about AI nationally with every week that goes by. In London, scientists, tech industry leaders, issuing a new warning today about the perils of artificial intelligence and what it poses to humankind. And the message is resoundingly the same every time there's a red flag waved. Quote, mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside with other societal scale risks such as pandemics and nuclear war. So we have artificial intelligence, apparently, into the minds of some scientists, up there with, you know, diseases that'll wipe out mankind, war that'll obviously wipe out mankind, and now this can obviously wipe out mankind. Put a question mark after that. Sam Altman, who's the CEO of ChatGPT, the maker of OpenAI, and Jeffrey Hilton, a computer scientist known as the godfather of AI, were amongst the hundreds of leading figures who signed this statement, which was posted on the Center for AI safety website. And that is, you know, worries about artificial intelligence outsmarting human beings and running absolutely wild all over us have intensified with the rise of, you know, a new generation of highly capable AI chatbots such as ChatGPT. I know one of the great worries is the ability of AI to create voices that are virtually undetectable as phonies from the real voice, with likenesses that do the same. Can you imagine how something like that can be used by an evil third party to, you know, get us into war, to coax us into a situation we don't want to be into because a certain leader that we've, quote, know and trusted has done this, that, and the other thing, and then it all turns out to be artificial intelligence leading us down that path, and that individual has had nothing to do with the statement made by it's, you know, AI replicant. I mean, I know this sounds very science fiction-y, but this is the basic worry of the AI community. Yeah. More than 1,000 researchers and technologists, including Elon Musk, signed a letter earlier this year calling for a 6-month pause on AI development, they said, because it poses a profound risk to society and humanity. Countries around the world are scrambling to come up with regulations for the developing of this technology, with the European Union being the number one and blazing the trail on its AI Act, expected to be approved later this year, for the same reason. Their fears are exactly as I posed them. So, I mean, where do we go from there? What do we do? How do you get around that? Is that a genuine fear, or is it just overthinking of something that is rather obvious but wouldn't happen because humans have restraint? And the point I made there, humans have restraint, is probably why we're worried about AI. We don't. We can't control ourselves sometime. So we just have to live with it the way that it is and pray that we don't do anything stupid. I mean, there's a lot of good that can, you know, evolve out of AI. Artificial intelligence, and I'm sure it already has. But, you know, the dark side of it is something that is very, very compelling. Very compelling. Here in the state of California, like I said, we're going to be all over the place here for a minute. The Senate on Wednesday, state Senate, passed a bill that would allow judges to review the cases of people sentenced to life without parole if the person, here we go, has been incarcerated for at least 25 years, according to a press release. So what does that mean? Are we breaking the promise set forth in, you know, a life sentence without the chance of parole. And here we go. Is this something, again, that's forgetting the aspect of punishment? Punishment being involved with a sentence handed down by a court of law? In California, we seem to forget the P word all the time. Punishment, punishment, punishment. Only if somebody is, you know, living with the R word, which means that they have been changed. And by the R word, I'll explain in detail in a minute. This is authored by State Senator Dan Cortese of San Jose. He's a Democrat. Senate Bill number 94, which passed in a 21-12 vote. It would authorize judges to use their, here it is, their discretion to consider which cases would be eligible for an evaluation by the Board of Parole Hearings. The parole board grants parole only to about 16% of petitioners, not a lot. Another individual, who's the project director of the Felony Murder Elimination Project, said the bill is the result of decades of hard work by people serving life without parole who have previously served the sentence and family members of individuals now serving life with parole. Quote, the coalition of organizations who are carrying this vital piece of legislation came together 3 years ago. We are so honored to carry this important bill. He added that the most challenging aspect of getting SB 94 passed is the amount of disinformation that is mobilized against it. Quote, this is very common sense. It's a modest bill. There are forces within California that want to maintain the unjust aspects of our criminal justice system, and that they are very, you know, effective at spreading inaccurate and distorted information about this bill and the effects in the processes that SB 94 implements. You know, the SB 94 would allow a small population of the oldest incarcerated Californians to petition a judge for a parole hearing. These are individuals, hear me again, that have been given a life sentence without the chance of parole. This breaks that bond without the chance of parole. People who've demonstrated complete rehabilitation, and there's the R word. We're more concerned about the R word than we are the P word, punishment. People who have demonstrated complete rehabilitation after decades in prison would face three levels of intense evaluation: the judge, the parole board, and the governor. That's all fine and well. To my way of thinking, somebody can be rehabilitated beyond the beyond. They can walk on water. They can do everything correctly. They've understood that what they did was so incredibly wrong. There's still the P word, punishment. Life without the, you know, possibility of parole. This is the punishment aspect of what you did. And nothing can replace that, not even being rehabilitated. This is the price you pay for doing what you did, regardless of what you've done to make yourself a better human being. You've made yourself a better human being. There's no reason why you can't serve out the punishment aspect of this and use what has made you a better human being with inside of incarceration to make other people's better human beings. You follow me? Elderly people, and I'm quoting, who have turned their lives around after decades behind bars would have an opportunity to rejoin society instead continuing to contribute to mass incarceration. It's time to put these cases in line with California's modern justice system. What modern justice system? Our modern justice system doesn't incarcerate anybody. It lets everybody out. Nobody serves any sentences anymore. And that's what this is attempting to do. It's attempting to become a bigger part of that by saying that promise of, you know, punishment without the possibility of parole is being thrown by the wayside. Now, research, they say, overwhelmingly shows that people out of the age of violent crime, what is that? The United States Sentencing Commission found out in 2017 that older offenders are substantially less likely to recidivate following a release than younger cohorts. Well, that only makes sense. They're just older. Everything comes with being older. They're less active. They're thinking differently. But that still doesn't take away what they did as a younger person, where the punishment, which is deemed to help the victim and victim's family, you know, judge life from a different scale, showing that there is, you know, the punishment for what that individual did exists. That helps them get better. I'm saying that rather clunkily, but you know what I'm saying. Rather than, okay, well, you're older now and you can go free, even though you killed, you know, two members of this man's family over here, his surviving two children. You killed them both, but you're older now, so you can go free. That doesn't work. It doesn't work for the family of those two children. Does it work for society? Certainly, because it's probably not going to, you know, the individual's not going to commit murder again, but they still have not served out the punishment aspect of what they were told that they were going to get because they did something bad. We keep removing that from every single activity being passed legislatively in the way of California designed to make California a better place and reduce the prison population. I'm so sick of it. It's break time at KMJ. Comments. There's a little more on this that I want to get to. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. I hope you understand where I'm going. I have nothing against, you know, rehabilitation, but I am against reducing that punishment because somebody claims to be rehabilitated, thus depriving the family of the victim, you know, their pound of flesh, to put it rather, you know, draconically. You know the word. I'll be right back. Jeez.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
I have no idea if judges in California would agree with me on this one or not, or agree with the movement on this one of SB 94 to eliminate that aspect of, you know, a punishment of sentencing that is life without the possibility of parole. Among, you know, offenders released younger than 21, 67% were rearrested, compared to 13% released at the age of 65 or older, according to the commission. Okay, well, so what? So what? I mean, I get that point, but there, you know, the point of punishment for the victim's family is not served by any of this early release stuff. The pattern is consistent with age groups. You know, as age increases, recidivism by any measure declines. Again, so what? Older offenders do not recidivate, and the longer that they're, you know, behind bars, the tamer they are. Okay, great. SB 94 would allow a person to petition for judicial review if their offense occurred before June the 5th of 1990. If they've served a minimum of 25 years, and if they were sentenced to life without parole. So in recent years, from what I understand, the legislature has modified extreme sentencing laws, as they're called, that has contributed to the mass incarceration in California. See, this again is all about reducing numbers, and it has nothing to do really with, you know, with curing somebody of their ills or, you know, punishment. Various laws have allowed courts to reconsider mitigating factors that may have influenced a person's behavior, but under SB 94, the way I look at this, the way I read it, judges would be able to consider mitigating factors that were not previously considered in the court, including whether the person was victimized by domestic violence, you know, childhood abuse or racial bias in the justice system. So it's old John Brodsky's theory. You know, a seagull took a dump on my head when I was 9, and this is why I did what I did. You know, they say that some people say too many people are trapped in sentences that do not reflect California's current view of justice and that are serving life without parole. Our current view of justice doesn't even exist. We don't have one. So I don't know what this person's talking about. Quote, these individuals were sentenced decades ago when our legal system was completely different than it is today. We need to allow judges to do what they do best, which is to review these cases and ensure they continue to be in the interest of justice. End quote. Well, in the interest of justice is that not only in the interest of the family of the survivors who suffered whatever it was that this, you know, evil individual committed. Let's get some phone calls on this. They're stacking up a little bit. Lee, go ahead. What's your thoughts?
Well, I just want to come at it, Ray. First off, I agree 100%. I did 7 years out at Pleasant Valley Prison working for Prison Fellowship on Friday nights with the chapel with the men, and saw many changed lives out there. Okay, not all. A lot of the men were posing coming into chapel, but my point is, there were some bad crimes that these guys did, and even though I saw that these men were changed in their heart, still, I support what you're saying. Punishment is punishment. If you're talking life without parole, you're talking the worst, heinous murders and crimes. Okay, there's no way that these people should even be considered to get out. They were given life without parole. Okay, and secondly, real quick, why is it always the people up in Sacramento with a D after their name that bring these things forward? Why doesn't California wake up and see what the Democrat Party is doing to California?
I think that's one of my points that I'm trying to make, Lee. Thank you very much. Again, this is about the family of the victim getting their pound of flesh. And that's kind of a bad way to put this, but making sure that what they were told was going to be the punishment for that individual that did whatever they did. And Lee is correct. If you got life without the possibility of parole, you committed the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst. And you may be, you know, completely a new person. You may be completely have been turned around. Your entire life is different. You've been rehabilitated like no other person before you. That still does not reduce the need of punishment being a part of the package given to the victim's family for their peace of mind. We're not taking that into consideration with all these newfangled laws based upon what people do at a certain age. You know, many people who are incarcerated would be eligible for SB 94 are women. According to, you know, individuals who study this, are coerced into participating a crime by their abuser. Under SB 94, judges would be able to consider a person's advanced age and reduce risk to public safety. And the bill is a third of the way by becoming law, as I understand it, and it now has to pass through the assembly committees for a floor vote, then going to the governor, where, well, I'm sure he would sign it. I mean, come on. And it's sponsored by SB 94, is sponsored by the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, the Felony Murder Elimination Project, the California Coalition of Women's Prisoners, and the Anti-Recidivism Coalition, and several other organizations. And, I mean, grant you, turning somebody around and making their life completely different than the individual that went into prison is a great, great thing. Rehabilitation is wonderful for that side of the equation of going to prison where you will be rehabilitated. The rest of it is punishment because of what you did, regardless of the rehabilitation, which is for the victim's family to give them peace of mind. Chuck, go ahead. You're next.
Okay. Hello.
Hi.
I agree with what you're saying. I haven't heard the word deterrent yet. You know, that it's more than somebody getting a pound of flesh for a crime committed to their family member or
sure,
whatever.
Sure.
You know, people need to know that if they commit a crime, there's consequences to be paid. And if you just say, oh, well, you know, Johnny learned his lesson and we'll let him out, after 6 months because of attempted murder because he learned his lesson, what kind of a deterrent is that for other people who are contemplating committing crimes?
I hear you. And we need so much more of that, not only with this being sustained as life without the condition of parole, period, end of statement, so people will know if they do this to a degree, whatever, you know, degree it is, you're not getting out under any circumstances. Hopefully that has some deterrency to some people, not all. Some are just going to do it anyway. But we have taken so much, you know, deterrent motivators, things out of existing laws in the state of California. There really isn't anything out there that says if you do this, you will get it or else. It's if you do this, you will get it to a certain degree and maybe can negotiate your way out, because we're too wishy-washy in the state of California and we don't like having people in prisons, which is a long way of saying exactly what the governor's up to in this race to close as many prisons as he can because he doesn't like the numbers of people behind bars. If he doesn't like the number of people behind bars, have stronger freaking laws so we can have deterrence, like the last caller was talking about. But he doesn't dare do that because that makes him look like a hard ass.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
I want to move on. I do think the my position on SB 94, I made very clear. And again, it's something that we talk about frequently. It's the difference between, you know, making somebody just a better citizen overall behind bars and punishment. You know, rehabilitation versus punishment. You've got to have both in a successful prison scenario where that individual is going to be less of a bother on the inside because they have been rehabilitated. But at the same time, they're staying on the inside because this is what was promised to the victim's family. Period. Illegal immigrants and other non-citizens, many would say, most of you, should not be voting in the U.S. But many do. When the Representative Bob Livingston of Louisiana led the Republican opposition to what was named the Motor Voter Bill, remember? In 1993, he dubbed it Otto Frotto. 30 years to the week after then-President Bill Clinton signed it into law, it seems a very apt moniker. According to a report that was released on May the 23rd from the Public Interest Legal Foundation, the PILF argue that the motor voter law needs to be modified greatly and updated. It guarantees for greater transparency, should be, you know, kept or even strengthened, and its loopholes allowed, it is allowing fraud all over the place, needs to be closed. The new report, the most recent in a series that this organization has released from across the country, shows that in the last 20 years, in Chicago, for example, 394 non-citizens were registered to vote, despite properly telling election officials they weren't citizens. And of those 20 that cast a total of 85 ballots in re-elections, the average length of time the non-citizens stayed in voter rolls before errors were caught was 7.5 years. One citizen was on the rolls, an illegal, for 30-plus years. Now, it's hard to believe that these occurrences have happened. But the number most substantially understates the real problem, if I may. The report covers only those non-citizens who have self-reported their status, but were registered against Illinois law, for example, and arguably against the U.S. Constitution. The incentives weigh overwhelmingly against self-reporting, so it stands to reason that many, many multiples of the reported numbers are on Chicago's voter rolls and elsewhere. This problem is not unique to Chicago, has been reported. Maricopa County in Arizona has had 222 foreign nationals on the voter rolls. Fairfax County, Virginia, 1,334. San Diego County, 264. And, you know, there were 1,300 more in 10 other counties where records are being examined. In Virginia overall, close to 6,000. 6,000 non-citizens were removed from voter rolls, but only after 7,500 votes were illegally cast. Think about it. I mean, these numbers are only a sampling, as the PILF must do its painstaking public information requests and all of that jurisdiction by jurisdiction. They have to claw through it with a microscope, and its reports cover only instances where erroneous registrations and votes eventually, mercifully, were discovered and fixed by state officials. So as the PILF Chicago's report has noted, motor voter is largely to blame. I mean, you know, it's 93. A lot of you have forgotten about it. Among its provisions aimed at making, you know, voter registration easier is the one that provided the bill's nickname, and that was provided by people getting a driver's license being registered to vote at the same time. Yet, lots of non-citizens got licenses. Sometimes they don't make it clear that they're non-citizens. Sometimes registration officials fail to record it even when a foreign national does properly report it. As the PLIF has noted, states that automate motor voter, not giving the immigrant a chance to decline registration during their DMV transactions, really exacerbate the hell out of the problem. If a computer algorithm is set to, how do I explain this? See, when I get to algorithms, this is when my head begins to spin. If you've got a computer algorithm that, see if I can say this right, is set to put in all newly licensed names and addresses on a voter list, foreign citizens appear to be eligible to cast ballots in every scenario because mistakes are made just about everywhere. The situation is worse in the 18 states, for example, plus Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia, that give driver's licenses even to illegal immigrants. Many legal immigrants want clean records in the hope of becoming viable citizens. So they continue to self-report. But, you know, illegal immigrants don't want to draw attention to their status. So almost none of them self-report when mistakenly put on a voter list. And then they are the first ones to vote. You follow me? Furthermore, although the PILF does not list this amongst its complaints, the 2002 Help America Vote Act helps mitigate the problem. Motor voter further conceivably could exacerbate the problem because its provisions for registering to vote by mail include this prohibition. Mailed voter registration application forms may not include any requirement for notarization or formal authentication, end quote. So if it's an illegal voter, he gets through, period. If a non-citizen registers by mail rather than in person, the application form is not even allowed to ask him or her to prove that the information that he or she has provided is correct. Now you follow me? Then if the non-citizen also votes by mail rather than in person, he or she still is never forced to prove his or her identification. It's another reason why we need to take a long look at the mail vote only. If in practice this clause hasn't been widely abused, it could lead to error or outright deceit. Autofrado, as it was called in 93, is probably a better name for it now in 2023. So what do we do about it? Apparently nothing, because nothing's been proposed to do anything about it. Other than there are just a few noisemakers out there, like these individuals, trying to make it known so somebody that's, you know, a bureaucrat will pick it up and run with it and say, this is not what our Constitution says. You've got to be a citizen to vote. Period. And with so much of this being done by mail now, this whole theory is correct. There's never a chance for the individual that's illegal to even do something about it if they want to on their own. Unless they go forward and go down to the particular agency involved and say, hey, look, this happened, and what are the chances of that happening? Especially if they're illegal, because they don't want to bring attention to themselves. They don't want to. So that's one we're stuck with. You know, again, we're stuck with so many things that are beginning to bear bad fruit after so many years, and at the same time, there's not an apparatus built into it that allows us to do something about it if it's a bad piece of legislation. It's up to the individuals that are serving us in either house or wherever they are, statewide or federally, to do something about it. And what are the chances of that in this day and age? We just celebrated Memorial Day, and this is important. I was glad to see this. While Americans consistently rank Christmas as the most important holiday, followed by the 4th of July, the importance of Memorial Day is now rating higher than ever, ever. And that's according to a Rasmussen poll. Yay! More than half the American adults, 51%, consider Memorial Day, which is for honoring those who have died while serving in the U.S. military, as one of the nation's most important holidays. That percentage is up from 47% last year, and it's its highest percentage ever recorded by Rasmussen. 37% say Memorial Day is somewhere in between, and a small 7% say it's one of the nation's least important holidays. God, somebody can say that with a straight look on their face? My God. Rasmussen served a whole number of people between May the 16th and the 18th. So this is recent stuff. It has a greater importance, especially with those who have served in the military. When we come back from the break, I'll give you some numbers of how this breaks down demographically, and I think you'll find it predictable but interesting. This is KMJ.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
Right now,
the Valley's legendary Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, KMJNow.com.
I think you're probably finding this story a little surprising in this day where you perceive the country to be just overwhelmed with extreme progressivism. To find out that Memorial Day has its highest ranking of importance ever, you know, by a majority, that's amazingly good news. And that even that little thing like that might give you some hope that there's help for the whole country. To break it down demographically, it breaks out just like you would think, but just to confirm, Americans that have been in the military, 79% rated as one of the most important holidays of ever in the country, 79% if you're a veteran, compared to 47% who've not, you know, been in uniform. And again, it's Rasmussen, and they do good work. By gender, 58% of men, moreover women at 45% believe it to be one of the nation's most important holidays. Perhaps in part because more men, 27% than women, 10% have served in the military. Maybe. The survey found that more Democrats, 24% than Republicans, 17%, unaffiliated voters, 13% who have served in the military. So more than half of both the Democrats at 52%, Republicans at 58% say it's one of the most important holidays, and 45% of unaffiliated voters say the same. Interesting to note that almost the Democrats and Republicans are tied in appreciating this day, almost close, if they've been in the military. It makes sense, though. By age, younger adults under 40 are less likely to place importance on patriotism. Also place less importance on Memorial Day, according to the poll. Americans over 65 rate Memorial Day certainly as one of the highest and most likely to have served in the military, the survey found. So that peels out the way that you would expect it to. But I think the big punchline is what I just said. To observe the importance of Memorial Day being rated higher than ever by probably the nation's most reputable survey firm, Rasmussen, gives great hope that this country that we have perceived to be, you know, just awash in extreme progressivism is maybe not awash in extreme progressivism. And there's hope for the future just strictly because of this little thing. A majority for the first time ever, feels that, you know, Memorial Day is one of the most important ever. And as it is, you know, former President Donald Trump posted Memorial Day messages yesterday, thanking those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. He's a huge patriot. He was all over Truth Social with this. And he had, he posted a lot of words. He posted a lot of images honoring the following at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, as well as Arlington National Cemetery. And he went out of his way to paint a picture that, you know, the current president had not painted at all on Memorial Day. Draw your own conclusions. But I think that, too, is also predictable. Looking at Dianne Feinstein for just a moment. In another report underscoring her health struggles, Dianne Feinstein appears to be really flummoxed by Vice President Kamala Harris presiding over the Senate. She's the vice president, of course. But according to the New York Times, last year, Feinstein looked very confused when Harris showed up to be a tie-breaking vote, which is one of the powers of the vice president, is enshrined in the Constitution. Feinstein asked her colleagues, what is she doing up there? And the upper chamber's website shows Harris in her role as the president of the Senate, casting her, you know, the 29 tie-breaking votes over a period of more than, 2 years. And Feinstein, it just didn't print that she was the vice president. That's a little scary. At 89, she's the oldest member of the Senate. And in recent years, some of her colleagues have been raising concerns about her mental fitness and the ability to do her job, as she's done for decades, with, I think, the great effectiveness, if indeed you're a Democrat. I mean, to a degree, a Republican, too. But the scrutiny is intensified after she made a comeback to the Senate in a wheelchair this month, ending a month-long absence, and to which lawmakers, looked at this with kind of a jaundiced eye. They're great she's back, but they think she's not doing what she should be doing after receiving treatment for recovering from the shingles that left her with some other disorders as well, too. But I just bring this up to note that she was confused by Harris's physical appearance in the Senate a year ago, before any of this happened to her. And that tells me that she was having some problems with diminished mental capacity even before all this noise showed up about the current day health problems and leaving the Senate for a long time and having problems with her memory. I don't think she's there for long. I don't. And then that's going to leave the governor of the California, pressed with a big decision he has to make. Maybe we'll talk about that next with Steve Hilton when he joins us for his regular Tuesday feature, which is always usually at 1 o'clock every Tuesday on KMJ. And he's next. So stay with us.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.